Spock sabotaged the system.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, Anakin and Ahsoka investigate a deadly bombing at the Jedi Temple. There will be, to quote Pippin the Musical, intrigue, plots to bring disaster. We're talking about sabotage this week. Sabotage. How you
sabotage.
Doing, Chris?
Sabotage.
I still like sabotage.
I like the William Shatner sabotage.
Sabotage.
Don't you mean sabotage? I know what I mean.
How are you doing this week?
I'm doing good. Finally had some good. I was out working on my yard today in the sun.
With the lack of snow?
No snow. We had snow on the ground yesterday morning. Yeah. And then it was in the 60s
today.
You guys
had such a long winter.
It's been a weird on and off. It's very typical here that we don't have spring, that it's just sort of winter, then it's just sort of lousy, and then it's summer. Spring is just sort of lousy. We get a few days of, like, that spring buds on the trees and the birds coming out and the bugs coming back, and then it's summer.
Yeah, we've been, like, weirdly cool here for a long time. Our big thing is we've been raining. We're, like, already, like 6 inches
Hope,
over
man,
for the year.
Man, you've been weirdly cool since I've known you.
Aw, thanks. No, but, like, last weekend, as of last weekend, we've only had, I think, 3 weekends since the beginning of the year that hasn't had rain. So, like, we've been, like, weirdly rainy for our
That's not typical for spring for you guys?
I mean, we get rain, but it's like a ton of rain.
Is like rain more like a winter thing?
After January, sometimes early February, that's when our snow stops, and then it's just cold, miserable rain for another month and a half, and then we switch usually from like cold, miserable rain to like spring thunderstorms, because like we live in Dixie Alley, so we get the second most tornadoes. But we've just had, like, weird, steady rain. Like, normally we're at, like, 15 inches by now. I think right now we're at, like, 23 inches for the year already. Like, we usually just get, like, pop-up thunderstorms and, like, supercells. But we've been having, like, all-day bouts of heavy rain, which is just very normal for us in this time of year.
I just love the term pop-up thunderstorms.
Yeah, they're interesting. It'll be raining in your front yard and sunny in the back.
Yep,
that's
yep.
The south.
Yeah, I remember as a little kid, one of my favorite. I've seen it happen a few times, but this was like my most, you know, just solid memory of doing this was literally a black line of a storm cloud going over our house when we lived on a farmhouse when we were little kids, and my sister and I just like. Not even running as fast as we can, but just running ahead of the rain, of a line of rain and blackness. And like we were in the sun and we're just running along the side of the house as it follows behind us. And then we got to the road and we couldn't cross the road and then got soaked.
Yeah, I remember the first time I ever had, like, it were ever like rained in the backyard and sunny in the front yard. I just kind of like went to the back window and then went to the front window. And went and saw the rain, and then went and saw the sun, and just turned around and went, Mommy! I was so confused. She's like, it's normal, honey. You're fine. Oh, my gosh, Chris. We actually have news. Because, like, since we always record so far in advance, weeks in advance, we never get news. So by the time this comes out, you guys will probably have already heard this, because I think actually it was Aaron that sent it to me first and foremost, and we've been talking about it on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. But I want to talk about it a little bit with you. They announced the next animated show, and I cannot believe it's going to be out this fall. That's, like, so soon.
Well, I'm not surprised at all. As a matter of fact, it was funny because you were like, we were both right, but the one thing you were telling me I was right on is I didn't guess that it would be called Resistance. I'd heard somebody Lucasfilm like say that was the name that they had taken for the next one.
No, so when I messaged you, I was listening to the episode and you were like, it'd be cool if it was called like Resistance or something.
Or I think the cool part is I wanted it to be in the time period after Last Jedi, and that would be when the Resistance, you know, really took hold.
Yeah, that's what you said.
And although I'm not opposed at all and not upset at all about it being in the time period that you called, actually, that you actually got right from your own brain and putting it together yourself.
I mean, well, that's the thing, because, like, I've been saying for a while now and over the course of the show that their next animated show will more than likely be pre-Force Awakens. And the reason is Clone Wars is, of course, about the Clone Wars, so it's pre-Episode 3. Rebels was before the new trilogy. It does not make sense for them to not have a show that's pre the current trilogy to, like, show the uprising of the Resistance. And so that just made sense to me. So, like, when I saw that and I read what it was, I just started screaming, I got it! I called it! I called it right! And then, like, my stepmom was downstairs and she was like, what'd you call?
That's nice, dear.
Right! But, yes, I'm going to read a little bit and then I want to talk about it for, like, a few minutes.
Okay.
So, this is from the press release. StarWars.com is thrilled to announce the production has begun on Star Wars Resistance, exciting new animated adventure series about Kazuda Ziano, a young pilot recruited by the Resistance and tasked with a top-secret mission to spy on the growing threat of the First Order. It will premiere this fall on Disney Channel in the U.S. and thereafter on Disney XD around the world. Featuring the high-flying adventures that the audience of all ages have come to expect from Star Wars Resistance is set in the time prior to Force Awakens, and will feature a beloved droid BB-8 alongside ace pilots, a colorful new characters and appearances by fan favorites, including Poe Dameron and Captain Phasma, voiced by actors Oscar Isaac and Gwendolyn Christie, respectively.
Cool.
In addition to Isaac and Christie, the voice cast includes actors Christopher Sean from Days of Our Lives, Susie McGrath from EastEnders,
which is a British, basically, version of Days of Our Lives.
Yeah. Scott Lawrence from Legion, Myrna Velasco from Elena of Avalor, Josh Brenner from Silicon Valley, Donald Faison from Scrubs, Bobby Moylan from DuckTales, Jim Rash from Community, and Rachel Butera from Tiny's Tea Time.
Tiny Tea Time.
So, yeah, so from what I can gather, I don't think that Oscar Isaac and Gwendolyn Christie's will be regulars.
No.
They're going to be, like, every once in a while. I could see Phasma being kind of like the Vader of Rebels, like, coming in when, like, shit hits the fan, causes some shit, and then we don't see her for, like, the rest of the season until next season.
I can see both of them basically coming in and doing their lines in it for each season in a day, you know, coming in and doing a couple hours and doing some lines. Yeah. I heard that it's going to be anime-inspired.
Yeah.
Or influenced, which I don't know if that means. Do you think that means it might be more traditional animation and not?
I was watching Star Wars Explained. You know how in the Rebels finale they had the 2D animation of the Mortis, the father and the son and the daughter.
Right.
They actually like put that out into like an animation house to do that anime, and I could see that like it being 2D anime. Anime style through that production house, and they like, you know, got a good relationship with them. And, like, when he said that, I was like, that makes sense. Because 2D animation...
But then again, part of Filoni's whole team is the whole... You know, what are you going to do with the whole CGI team of it? Or maybe it'll be CGI with just a more anime look, you know?
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know, because, I mean, I don't know how animators work. I don't know if you can go back and forth between 2D and 3D.
Sure.
I don't know.
I mean,
but,
you can.
I just feel like it'd just be, you know, a different style. Like, you know, they probably have a lot of the same designers because, you know, how
I mean,
they design.
I mean,
Total
Disney
Wars is
Disney's
they would...
done movies with 2D and 3D happening at the same time.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, just like a Tangled, the original movie was 3D, and the current TV show is 2D. I mean, you can go back and forth.
Well, the Tarzan animated Disney movie was you know, the part said so they would do traditional animation of Tarzan swinging through the trees and all the trees would be computer animated behind him, you know, and
yeah,
and stuff like that. So it could be a combination of both. I'm not surprised at all that it's coming out in the fall. As a matter of fact, I'd be very surprised if it wasn't. I'm just saying, I would totally believe that they've been planning this all along because Disney's got to have a long-term plan, and Dave Filoni is killing it. You know, it's like keep him going. He knows they know the material. They do great job on the material. They have a rapport with the fans. They have a whole house, you know, a business that they've set up to get, you know, that they've worked on together through Clone Wars and Rebels. And they have a team of experts. It's just like that resource is priceless. You know, if they had to tear it all down and get new writers and a new animation house and stuff like that, and then you're taking the risk, it might not be too good. You know,
I didn't include it in here, but they did say a lot of like the same like executive producers and writers and stuff are coming back. Like,
yeah, and then that also helps you keep everything organized continuity-wise anyway, because you've got the people who know how to do it, and you got the people who wrote a lot of the continuity you're going to be dealing with.
I want to talk about some possibilities, because I have a feeling this will be, unlike Clone Wars and Rebels, this will be a relatively Jedi-like show. I think it's going to... Dave Filoni was talking about how, like, he's always been fascinated with, like, World War II fighter pilots, and his grandfather was a fighter pilot. I think we're going to be seeing more people like Poe. Like, well, no, of course we're not going to see Poe, but they already said that Kazuda, Ziano, this new guy or girl, we don't know who they are.
He's going to be our Poe Luke Skywalker.
It doesn't state a sex. It could be a woman.
That's true.
But, yeah, I think we're going to be following along with them more along the lines, which I think would be a nice, interesting take to have, like, a Jedi step away. That being said, I also would not be surprised if we saw some of Luke's Jedi school and the uprising of the Knights of Ren.
Maybe once it gets going, you know, they'll probably do their Filoni thing where it's just sort of like, hey, here's some adventure stories for the first season. And then the second season, they'll start getting serious. And they'll also have some stuff, you know, by their second season, they'll have some stuff to work in from episode 9. So,
yeah,
or work into the, you know, past. But,
I think we're going to be seeing a Jedi for the first season.
I think I think we might get a little bit of Luke in his school in the Knights of Ren, and I think we'll get some of was it Christopher Lee? Yeah, Christopher Lee's character in Force Awakens, who dies at the very beginning. And he
Christopher
was
Lee. He played Dooku.
Or Dooku. I'm thinking he played
the old
man. What's that?
The Lor Sakatar.
Yeah, he played Emperor Ming in Flash Gordon.
Well, I don't think they'll do that because Lor San Tekka, they covered him and where Poe was trying to bind him in the Poe Dameron comics. It's already been covered.
Yeah, but what if they had him and his group as characters in this? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess it really depends on how early is it going to be set. Did it say?
Well, I'm hoping if he's spying on the First Order, I'm hoping what we have is two stories. One story taking place in the nascent resistance, and the other story with Kazuto, whoever Kazuto Ozano is sort of embedded in with the First Order. You know what I mean? He or she joins up and is spying from the inside. That would be really interesting, because then you could have, you know, a little bit of every once in a while, just like Palpatine, you could have Snoke and you could have Kylo Ren and probably a good deal of Hux.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it would be really interesting to see the early formation of the First Order, you know, because I think that's something they sort of slacked on in the movies so far, is who the First Order are and what they really are. And this would be the chance to flesh it out, to show that they're just sort of like this weird, almost like religious cult, more than, you know, the Empire was a sort of political force movement more than anything.
Because we were talking about, like, how not, like, a lot of it's been covered in the books, but we've talked about it before, not everybody reads the books.
Right, right. And the thing is, with a TV show, they could illustrate a lot of that stuff. They could use a lot of that stuff from the books in the TV show and illustrate it. You could even have characters that had turned up in the books turn up in this TV show and, you know, to integrate it even more. But I just think, and I'm a pure visual Star Wars consumer, pretty much. You know, I want to watch the TV shows, comics, and movies. And so I think there's a level of to where they try to, that, you know, when you have the books and stuff, that's sort of like bonuses for the people who want to take the extra effort, you know, and get in there. Yeah. But I have a feeling that, like, for the TV show, you know, I don't know. I'm just talking about what I really want to see. So
yeah, because I think it'd be interesting to see, because, like, you know, everything, we're only seeing one group of the Resistance, which is Poe and Leia's group. I'm thinking this is going to be like Rebels, and we're going to be seeing another faction of Resistance, and every once in a while they, like, you know, get together with the main group, and then we go back to following their adventures. I think that it's going to have a really Rebels set up in that aspect, where, like, it's like, here's these main guys. What happens if we turn the camera to this half of the galaxy over here?
Mm-hmm.
What's happening over there?
It's very similar to, like, where Rebels started, except the Resistance is even less so than the Rebellion. The Resistance is really ragtag. I mean, they're ragtag before they even get pretty much wiped out in The Last Jedi. So it should, and they're sort of a dark horse group. I noticed that they haven't really mentioned Leia's name at all in any of it, but you would think that she could probably turn up in this.
Yeah, especially since they already have a voice actress for Leia in both Rebels and Forces of Destiny.
Yeah, but that's for the young Leia. Well, we talked
about that. Like, all she has to do is, like, gravel up her voice.
Gravel up her voice, but, like, true graveling is usually achieved through an attentive, you know, regimen of cigarettes and bourbon.
Yeah,
and with Carrie Fisher, anything else, but those are the gravel makers. But either way, you would think that Princess Leia would be showing up in this. I would think.
I know. The other thing I really want to see in this is, because with Clone Wars, they brought a bunch of Clone Wars characters into Rebels. Like, we have Rex and Ahsoka and Hondo, and that was, like, one of their big things, is carrying over these, like, Clone Wars characters to Rebels. Now I want to see. Because it's only, like, what, like, 25 years later, 30 years later,
30.
What Rebels characters they'll bring over into this show. Because there's a good chance that a lot of them will still be alive. And I have some bets and theories about what we're going to see, who some of those characters could be.
Old Ezra is a possibility.
A lot of people are wondering if Ezra and Thrawn are going to be coming back about this. This is when they're coming back. Because, like, the thing about the First Order is, we know this from, I think the book is Aftermath. When Rey Sloane, at the Battle of Jakku, was just like, oh shit, we're losing, she gathers what's left of the Empire, and using Thrawn's notes about the Unknown Regions, they jumped into the Unknown Regions, and that's where they started the First Order. So it was based on Thrawn's notes. So a lot of people are wondering if this is, like, where, if, like, maybe, like, when the First Order comes back, like, they... that's where they ran into Ezra and Thrawn. If this is going to be the return of Ezra and Thrawn, a lot of people are clamoring for that. Me personally, I think Kazan, I think, is writing a trilogy again. The second Thrawn book's out this summer. I think the third Thrawn books is going to be Ezra and Thrawn's adventures. That's just me. That's actually what I really want. It's just a whole novel of their crazy ass adventure. That's what I want. Purgle adventures. Because those fucking space whales.
If I was doing if I was going to do it, and I wanted to be, like, creative about it, I would have them become buddies and Thrawn, you know, Ezra slowly, you know, cures Thrawn, you know, turns Thrawn into a more human character, you know, like, you know, humanizes him. Because it could very possibly be, Thrawn could end up at best like a Sherlock Holmes type of character, you know?
Yeah. But the person actually I think that could possibly be the quote-unquote Jedi in this is Kanan and Hera's son, Jason. Because Sabine says in the finale of Rebels, like, this is their son, Jason Syndulla. You can get, and he takes after his father. So a lot of people have been debating whether or not Jason is possibly Force-sensitive. And if he could be, like, in Luke's school of Jedi. So I could actually see him joining the Resistance, taking after his mother, and part of it is he's like, holy shit, I have magic powers. What the fuck is this?
Yep.
I think that could be really interesting. I wouldn't be surprised to see old Hera, old Zeb and Kallus. You know, I could see them coming back from Lirison and just getting involved in the Resistance again, like Rex got involved. I don't think we'll see Rex, because I think he'll be way too old.
Rex, yeah, unfortunately.
Rex is probably pretty done. He's probably,
you might,
like,
not want to. Rex would be in some sort of, like, you know, space wheelchair or something by then. You might not want to see Rex.
Clone's double age, so he'd be, for him to make it, what, 50 years, he'd be like 100.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Now for clones, there is one clone who could be in it. Because we do know that canonically, Kix made it to the Force Awakens timelines because he was cryogenically frozen and stuck on Count Dooku's ship, and he was found by a character in The Force Awakens. He was found by Captain Athano. So if they still wanted to have a clone character, it would probably more than likely have to be Kix, because he's the only clone that made it.
Yeah.
I'd still be really cool with, because I've said that a few times. I wanted Kix to show up in the new trilogy.
Be very surprised.
I would not. I think they love their clones so much, and Dee Bradley Baker is far too talented to not include him. But yeah, like I would be very surprised if they didn't bring Rebels characters into the Resistance, because, you know, 30 years apiece, and now this like big bad is back threatening them again. We know these characters so well, why wouldn't they fight? And they have the experience to fight. So I could see them all taking, like, older mentor, kind of like Leia stands and stuff.
Right.
So I'm very excited.
We only have to wait till the fall, and that's not going to be long before it gets here.
But I'm really excited about Star Wars Resistance. I can't wait to see the animated style, because it did take me a while to get used to Rebels animation. But, I mean,
And it took a while to get rid of Clone Wars, or to get used to Clone Wars at first, too. So it's, they're keeping us on our toes.
Yeah. Well, I guess we should go into the episode, because I have a shit ton of notes.
All right.
Yeah, and there's a lot to read, so. You ready?
I'm ready.
Sabotage is the 105th episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars, and it aired on February 9, 2013. It was written by Charles Murray and directed by Brian Callan O'Connell. Some extra information for you. The voice of Leta Termold is Carrie Walgren, and her other works include Adventures of Symbols, Rick and Morty, Gravity Falls, Naruto, and Star Wars The Knights of the Old Republic games. Sin Dralig is voiced by Robin Atkins-Down. He's the voice of Hera's father, Sham Syndulla, in Clone Wars and Rebels, as well as Padme's old boyfriend, Clovis. This is Sin Dralig's. I can't talk tonight. This is Sin Dralig's only appearance in Clone Wars. He is the head of the Jedi Temple Guard. He's also a lightsaber instructor with the nickname The Troll. He was killed by Darth Vader during Order 66. He was played in Episode 3 by stunt coordinator and swordmaster Nick Gillard. The episode was named for Alfred Hitchcock's 1936 film Sabotage. All four episodes of this story arc, in fact, were named after various Hitchcock narratives. Anakin Skywalker's statement to Ahsoka Tano, "I'm afraid one can become another," was in reference to past betrayal of the Jedi by political idealists, including Count Dooku and Season 4's General Pong Krell. It's ironic given Anakin's future as Vader. Russo ISC's characterization and name allude to Dave Caruso's role in the crime drama series CSI Miami. The signs among the temple protest group include a clone trooper behind a crossed out sign and Arabic phrases that state, "The Jedi are corrupt" and "Stop cloning violence." The gunship that carries Rex on Cato Nemordia is the Lucky Leku, the one seen in the very start of the series. Now its artwork includes hash marks on the ship's nose, showing the impressive number of kills it's amassed. This is the first episode to debut the Episode 3-style Jedi Starfighter, the Eta-2 Inceptor. And, of course, Anakin manages to destroy it. And there was an episode featurette this time. Oh my god, I need to break up some of this. It's really fucking big. And so I don't lose my spot. There we go. Cool. So, the episode featurette is this one. Dave Filoni discusses the cost of the Clone Wars by saying, "In Sabotage, I wanted to activate the audience right away with a very traditional Star Wars fashion, with some good old-fashioned banter between Ahsoka and Anakin. We open with this very big thing, and open with this idea of how to tell a story with Ahsoka this season. George Lucas came in with this idea to do a procedural crime drama, which I'll admit that's not exactly my strength. We were very fortunate to have a new member on our team, Charles Murray, who knew how to write procedurals. His previous work included Castle, Criminal Minds, and The Third Watch. We believe that he should be the one to take this arc with Ahsoka. When our heroes go into the mystery of the bombing of the Jedi Temple, it became a very different story. A story we haven't done with Ahsoka, and one where it allowed to show how much more mature she had become. Over the years of Clone Wars, we've shown that there are groups of people who disagree with the war and what the Jedi are doing. Why are they fighting the war? Chris's favorite animals ever, the Lurmen, are doing this." I added that part. "The Twi'lek Shum Sedula is doing this. Satine does it. All of this slowly sets up the idea of why are the Jedi fighting this war? For the first time in the series, we show a group of people protesting the Jedi Order, protesting the war. Why is this going on? Why hasn't this ended? Why did you create the clones? I think with the protests, you see that that even with the citizens, there are people who aren't happy with the Jedi. I think it was bold on George to let us go and show that the heroes can't be painted with such a bright brush anymore. Maybe they have been compromised. So we have laid the groundwork and have been the entire series. How do you vilify how you vilify the Jedi Order in the minds and hearts of the people of the Republic? This is a big development. As we move forward, you'll see a change not only in the public's perception of the Jedi, but also a change in the military that the Jedi have governed. And you start to see in the story arc, there are more than any other we've done, the rise of the Empire, and visuals that you might see in the Empire during A New Hope and The Empire Strikes Back." Yuck. But yeah, I mean, this is like one of the big arcs that I was just like, yeah, they've alluded to people not liking the Jedi and questioning why they are. Here we are.
Here I am.
Oh, hey Yoda, how are you? You know, I made a Yoda joke for you in my note. One of the acts, I made a Yoda joke. I don't remember where it is though. So you'll just have to listen for it.
Wonder why people don't like the Jedi. Here I am.
You're exactly the reason why. You're the best.
Oh.
Best.
This week, good one. Good one.
Yeah, what's the platitude this week?
Good one. Yoda likes this one. Sometimes, even the smallest doubt can shake the greatest belief in bed.
See, I thought you would not like this one because, like, you're already pretty small, and if someone doubts something is even smaller, they dial that it's not as big as it's supposed to be.
We'll shake that belief.
It's the motion of the ocean, right?
Very similar to ocean motion, yes. Yoda was just about to say that.
Say that, Yoda was about to.
Yes. Yoda was going to say something about magic in the wand.
Okay, easy there, Harry Potter.
Slightly Potter.
I just imagine the scene where, like, Ron is puking slugs. And he just pukes up an entire Yoda.
Hello!
What's that code? Like, when people are sexually aroused and people are, like, by being eaten, is that boar?
Yes, it is. And you know what? And you know why I know that?
Why?
Because, and now I have a chance to plug it. It's actually, tomorrow, I will be recording an Eat It and Beat It, where we had to try to find some of the weirdest porn that we could. And one of the videos I saw, and I want to describe it, but I've got to save it for the show, because I'm gonna be describing it on the show, was a vor video.
Huh.
And yeah, it was really bad.
Well, you know, different strokes for different folks.
Oh, sure, you know, but yeah, but when you're not of those people that, like, are the ones who would say commission one of those videos and you see it, it's a totally different experience than somebody
who's... I totally get that. Like, there are things that I've watched where I'm just like, you know, this does it for me. I can understand why this doesn't do it for other people. I get it. But I mean, like, some different strokes for different folks. We all have our things that we're just like, yeah, this works for me, but it might not be cool with everybody else. That's fine.
I just find it fascinating. And I understand that too, but I also find it fascinating how sometimes the things that do it for certain people are so incredibly, like, weird in an imaginative way, but they're complicated too. It's just like...
Yeah.
This is something you're not going to experience in real life, ever.
Yeah, like, I'm not going to get into this conversation.
Yeah, well, just, yeah.
This isn't Eat and Beat It.
Yeah.
Needless to say, go listen to Eat and Beat It.
It's just funny because now I've heard that phrase twice in the last week, and I'd never heard it before. It's got to stay, it's V-O-R-E, and it's got to stand for something, but I don't know where vor, it comes from carnivore or herbivore. It's, okay, never mind.
Let's see, meaning... I can't believe I'm Googling this on this podcast.
It's got to be from, like, carnivore, herbivore.
Meaning to devour.
Omnivore, so, yes.
Yeah, it's a devour. It's the V-O-U-R of devour.
Okay.
So, from mine for vorvore. So it means to swallow. Anyway, Act 1. I had some trouble splitting some of these acts, too. So I think between Act 2 and Act 3 is when I had the most trouble, so...
Well, this act, I had the commercials on this one. The Act 1 was incredibly short. Act 2 was, like, long. And then Act 3 was, like, a normal size act. It was weird.
Yeah, I think there's a screen wipe at one point. So I think I took Act 1 a little bit longer. Did you get to the council and before the commercial break?
Yes.
Okay, cool. That's what I did. So that was about the first, like, 6 minutes, so...
Yeah, no, the break was really obvious, so... But it was, yeah.
I think it was between Act 2 and 3. I had trouble breaking it, so... Anyway, Act 1.
Act 1.
The planet of Cato Nemordia is under attack from the Separatists. Anakin and Ahsoka are there to try and stop the baddies. They zoom in on their starfighters zipping through space. Arriving on the planet, they take the air fight to the city. One droid ship shoots missiles at them, but it turns out to be buzz droids, who start ripping apart of Anakin's ship. R2-D2 and Anakin get the buzz droids off, or so they thought, missing a slew of them on the bottom. The buzz droids take out Anakin's engines, knocking him unconscious. R2 takes over flying, and Ahsoka's droids takes command of her ship. She jumps over to Anakin's ship as it crashes on a cliff. She rips Anakin out of the cockpit to the cliff, but R2 goes over the edge. But he flies out of the clouds unharmed, because, of course, they can't kill R2. Anakin wakes up and calls in Rex for a pickup. Anakin gets a call from Yoda, and he tells them to return to the Jedi Temple at once. There has been an emergency. The Jedi Temple has been bombed. They return to Coruscant at once and chat with the Jedi Council. Anakin asks how the Separatists could infiltrate the Jedi Temple since it's so secure. But we also remember that Cad Bane could do it, so how safe is this place, really? Yoda says it's worse than the Separatists. They don't actually know if it was the Separatists until there's an investigation. They even say it could be a Jedi. Bum, bum, bum. Ahsoka can't believe that it was a Jedi. Because Anakin and Ahsoka had been off-world when the bombing happened, they have an alibi. The Council can't trust anyone who had been on Coruscant at the time. Therefore, Anakin and Ahsoka will lead the investigation. You know what I just realized as I was reading that? When the Council were like, we can't trust anyone, they all sort of looked at each other like, we can't trust you guys.
Right, we were all here.
Yeah. Right,
yeah, but you know what? They should be... Anakin and Ahsoka should actually be suspicious because they were away. You know, it, like, they might have set it up and then got out of there so they weren't around for it. You know, I would be suspicious of them too, you know? If you're going to be suspicious of anybody, you got to be suspicious of everybody. So I didn't... I mean, just on a superficial level, it's like, yeah, they weren't there when it happened, so they couldn't have done it, but that's still... That doesn't. If I was a real crime investigator, that wouldn't be enough for me to be like, yeah, I discount these two, too.
You know, I want to say something, but it might spoil some of the plot for the next few episodes.
Okay.
So I will say that you're not too far off.
Okay, good.
On the plot.
We'll put a pin in that note then. Nice soundtrack music in the beginning. Now, I'll say this about the opening. The music is really good, and it's great. It's sort of a like mini version of the opening of Episode 3 with Obi-Wan and Anakin bantering and fighting buzz droids.
And we even have an Episode 3 ship for the first time.
Right. So it's also sort of visually telling us we're moving into closer to Episode 3. But... When you look at it, it really doesn't do anything. And this isn't a criticism because it's kind of cool, actually, because it's just fun to have Anakin and Ahsoka doing something. They're sort of separate from the whole Maul thing, the Maulio brothers thing and that drama. And they're just sort of out fighting the war. So it's just a good little bring them back into the story. But it completely has nothing to do with the story at large. It's just sort of like this background battle. But it's very beautifully done.
That's actually a really good point because we just got through the Maul arc. Before that was the droids. Before that, Ahsoka was on her own during the kid arc. And then Anakin was there for the first episode and a half of the Saw Gerrera arc. But then Ahsoka was there for the rest of the time. And then before that was Maul again. So they really haven't had an episode together, just the two of them.
I consider them like the main team of this series, too.
I'm going back. They haven't had an episode just the two of them working together since the Slaver arc of season 4.
Right. So they brought them back in like you would in a movie, almost, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was nice. It was nice to see them, and I loved I thought the scene where he's just like tips his ship up to so she can look on the underside and it's just covered with buzz droids. I thought that was really great. It reminded me of like that. It was really creepy kind of because they're just like parasites, you know. It was sort of like
and they have that little cackling laugh noise that they had during the droid arc. That
it's like that. It's like, well, it was kind of creepy. It reminded me of the Stephen King story. Or the Stephen King movie, Stand By Me, where they get the leeches on their balls when they go swimming, you know? And they're all just sort of like, hey, everything's fine. And then when they get out of the water, it's like, whoa, no, we're covered in leeches. And that was sort of, you know, he's like, well, I got rid of them. And then his bottom, you know, his ship is basically just doomed because you could tell they've just dug right in. And that was pretty cool. And it also... You see in Episode 3 when he and Obi-Wan are in a similar situation that they deal with it differently. They scrape them off each other's ships with their wings and stuff. So, you know, he learned his lesson this time. So it was just a real cool little opener and way to push us into, you know, the story, you know, basically, you know, most of the first part is really nothing to do with any of the rest of this, probably not knowing the rest of it, but I doubt it's going to. So it's like the last 2 minutes where they're in the Jedi Council that really has any story significance here. Mm. But I gotta say again, the music is really good. The music stands out in this as very action-packed and thematic. And visually, the battle is really good, and I like...
I like the one scene where they're standing on the cliff, and Anakin's like, Yoda, we're in the middle of something, and he looks over, and the battle's like off over there in the background. Mm-hmm.
That's what I was just going to say, that they're like in the battle and they're engaged in it. And then when they're called back and they're out of the battle, then you see it just in the background. And there's one big ship that's going down, and it's about to go down. It's about to take out like the cities and this planet are like hanging from cliffs on like hammocks.
Yeah, this was the Nymordian city that we had talked about, and they have to do that because the bottom of the planet is poisonous gas, so they have to do... Because remember we were talking about all you have to do is shoot out, like, one side and the entire city falls off?
Right,
we
and talked about there was that. A giant ship coming down in flames right on one of those cities, and they cut away before it happened. It was just like, you're in the battle, and then all of a sudden you're sort of detached from it, and then you're going back to the Jedi Council, and you're seeing that there's just, like, chaos going on, but, you know, they detach you from it, and it's just sort of like this thing playing out, and they kind of tease you with it, too, because it's just like, oh, my God, that ship's going to take that out. Oh, that's going to be, oh, nope. And they cut the angle, and then the next thing you know, they're back home.
I would have loved, like, while he was, like, when it cuts back to them, like, there was, like, this big explosion light on Anakin's face, like, something fiery just went up.
Yeah.
But all you can see is Anakin's face just light up.
That's always how those holograms are. Those holograms are always, like, a blah, 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 and then it's, like, and then you see him, like, either fight off somebody or you see them get beat and you see just, like, a couple shots of droids coming in.
Well, no, what I'm saying is, like, when it cuts back to Anakin... The ship actually hits the city, and we see, like, the light
just
of the explosion.
Light from it, but not the actual explosion. Yeah, that would have been cool.
Yeah, like, the sound of it. That would have been fun.
But that's all I got for part one. It was a really short part. It was probably maybe, like, 5-6 minutes long.
Yeah. Well, for me, I pretty much had the same note. Like, I really enjoy us... It felt like old Clone Wars, you know, like, back to basics Clone Wars, where we have Anakin and Ahsoka... And it's almost, like, sentimentally sweet at this point in the series because we get to, like, finally kind of go back to, like, old Clone Wars and stuff. And, like, I know what happens in this arc, so, like, that's what made it, like, extra sentimentally sweet. And it's just nice to have, like, a moment to feature, like, why they're such a good duo, having them banter back and forth, it being very Anakin Obi-Wan in Episode 3. So, I mean, it's just, I really liked that moment. And finally, I just, like... having this kind of story in Clone Wars, like there's a bombing at the Jedi Temple and it's a crime investigation, because it kind of reminded me a little bit of the Senate murder episodes where Padme's uncle was murdered, but this time it's with the Jedi, so it's a similar kind of story, but it's a brand new feeling to it because now it's with Jedi.
There's different implications when it might be a Jedi.
Yeah. So I really like it. It's already a new kind of story that we haven't yet seen before. Almost like it's... I wonder if something happened like this... Or actually, no. Dooku probably just left with a flourished cape throw or something. But I wonder if like this kind of thing like happened when Dooku left. If the council had a moment of, was like, who else is going to leave? Like,
what's up with this? Yeah.
Yeah.
They probably had a few moments where they were like, let's keep this under our Jedi hats for as much as we can, too.
Yeah. So it's interesting. But that's all I had for Act 1. The majority of my notes is Act 2 and 3.
Yeah, well, that's where the majority of stuff happens.
So Act 2?
Act 2 it is.
They go to the hangar where the bombing happened. Ahsoka can't believe a Jedi would do this, but Anakin's like... Oh, it happens all the time. Dooku, Krell, the future Grand Inquisitor and Rebels, me. Actually, you might want to ignore that last part. I'll never fall to the dark side, wink, wink. There's a little bot named Russo ISC, who is investigating the accident. Anakin wants Russo and Ahsoka to start the interviews, but Russo says that people are wary of the Jedi. He thinks that he should interview them alone, since the witnesses have already heard rumors that there was a possible Jedi behind the attack. He doesn't think they should come. but Anakin shuts that down and demands that Ahsoka goes with Russo. The interviews aren't going that great, since the victims are wondering if a Jedi was behind the attack, despite many of them working in the temple for years. A Pantoran speaks up about who he thinks blew up the hangar. He says it was probably Jakar Bomani. He worked with the maintenance crew. The Pantoran saw him leaving the hangar before the explosion, and he hasn't been seen since. They now have a lead! Anakin joins them and says the rumor of it being a Jedi is spreading faster than Yoda swamp gas. There you go, Yoda.
Anakin thought you were going to say swamp crabs.
No. Swamp gas is more deadly. Anakin heads out to talk to security. Outside the temple, there's an anti-war protest going on from the family and friends of the victims of the blast. Anakin meets with Master Sin Dralig. He shows Sin a picture of Jakar. Jakar's wife, Leta Termonde, springs out of the crowd. Anakin brings her inside for questioning. In the holding cell, the investigation isn't going too great. Leta is pissed that the Jedi can't find her husband. Jakar has dedicated his entire life to get a job at the temple. She begs Anakin to find her husband. Meanwhile, Russo and Ahsoka are using a hologram to analyze the explosion. Anakin joins them, and they realize that there's no bomb residue. Someone must have triggered one of the ships to explode. They wonder if Jakar set it up, but they're starting to really wonder if it was, in fact, a Jedi who betrayed them. Russo finds an anomaly, and some of the debris is covered in nanobots that are highly explosive. They find out that Jakar was a munitions expert in charge of the gunships. His specialty was nanoweapons. They begin to search the temple to see if Jakar is still there. Anakin and Ahsoka update the council on their progress. They need to act fast. The Senate wants to send the military police to get some answers, since clone and civilians died in the blast. Russo calls in that he's found Jakar. They go to the medical bay, and all they have of Jakar is his hand. He actually died in the explosion. Jakar was actually the bomb, infecting himself with nanobots. They have to now search Jakar's home for evidence. What'd you think about two?
I actually, unlike you, now that I see this big wall of pink here, I have very few notes for Act 2. I heard Russo's name is Rizzo. So I was thinking of him as Rizzo the Robot. I like that because he's kind of like Rizzo the Rat from the Muppets. And my first thought is I don't trust Rizzo the Robot. But I don't trust Rizzo the Robot. I think they're trying to get me to not trust Rizzo the Robot.
Why don't you trust him?
Something about him seems fishy.
Well, I will say so far, most of the police people we've seen is like Tan Devo, who is an asshole.
In something like this, everybody's, if you look hard enough at him, if you're going to do a crime procedural sort of like this, everybody's got to look a little fishy. And Rizzo the Robot seemed like kind of like a red herring, kind of fishy, but I didn't.
See, he reminded me of like if Dr. Huyang from the Kid arc and Wally had a baby.
yeah.
I like both of those bots, so.
My other note is this is Space CSI, and I guess I was right because they literally brought up CSI when talking to this. It isn't very Hitchcockian, even though they're using Hitchcock names for it. It is more CSI.
Yeah, I think they purposely would just like use the names. I don't think they were trying to like model it after Hitchcock movies.
Yeah, the whole scene where they're walking through, it was a really cool scene where they're walking through, you know, the hangar and the explosion is sort of digitally playing out around them. That was a really neat thing, you know. That was really well handled And it reminded me of CSI, except they have better technology than CSI.
Yeah.
But the same sort of thing, you know. And then there's little tags over things. It was well done. My only other note, you know who we need on this case?
Who?
Joe Camel.
We saw him for half a second walking through the hallway.
Joe Camel on this case, man. He is the Columbo of Star Wars. He could get it, you know. Put him to work. He works slow, but you can have him working in the background, and he'll start figuring stuff out. He's your Jedi man on the job. Even though he's suspicious, I would really put him in the low low, suspicious, turn to the dark side kind of characters. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If he did turn to the dark side, Joe Camel would be a horrible enemy. But his secret Sith power would be to give you lung cancer instantly. He would charm children. They'd come up to him, "Look, it's Joe Camel," and he'd be just like, "Come on." They're all like, "My lungs."
I was thinking the other thing. I just finished reading the miniseries that tells of suspense with Hawkeye and Bucky teaming up. So they're trying to find if Natasha Romanoff is dead. And there's a scene where she's working for the Red Room and she's trained a bunch of child ballerinas to be assassins. And at one point she's just like, "Attack!" And these tiny ballerina children just go and start ripping people to pieces.
They would be deadly, yeah. Fast and accurate.
And that's how the Inquisitors started.
And energetic. But that's all the notes I have. I was really happy that they mentioned Krell.
Yeah, I forgot about that because I think it was sometime in, I think it might have been Carnage of Krell, I said that they don't even bring up Krell again for the rest of the show, so I'm happy I'm wrong.
Yeah, in the context of Dooku, too, so that was really cool.
But yeah.
That's all I got. I see you've got a few notes here. I'm really surprised you have this many notes for this part. I'm really interested to see what's in here.
Oh, there's a lot. Ready?
If you guys haven't noticed, I get Hope's notes usually the day of the show, but I never read ahead on them. Because it's almost like spoiling.
Some of these are, most of these are shallow, but I have like one big block of like multi-passive big notes. It's a really quick scene right at the beginning of the act, but like when Anakin first walks into the hangar, I like to see how the Force is playing here, because Anakin says that he can still hear the screams of the people who died.
Well, I will bet Anakin, the kind of personality he is and what we know about his future, that would be something he would tune right in on, you know?
Yeah. But, I mean, we don't always get to see, like, it actually kind of reminded me of when Alderaan blew up and Obi-Wan said his line of, like, "It's like a million voices cried out and was suddenly silenced," or something like that.
And and now that you mention it, he does seem kind of distracted and a little bit, you know, thrown off.
Yeah. And I found it, I wonder if, like, Ahsoka was feeling, because she seemed super focused the entire episode, but, like, every time Anakin was in the hangar, he does seem a little off.
Right. Distracted and maybe perturbed a little bit.
Yeah. So I like seeing how he was connected to the Force in that way. It was a fast moment, but it was a very telling moment. I'm going to skip my big note and just get through my little ones first. I would have liked to see them, like, bring back Tan Devo for the police from the Senate Murderers case, just because I want to see Anakin get tired of his shit and, like, Force throw him out a window.
I thought about him, that his Weasley little ass might be good in this episode, but then I'm like, oh yeah, that's right, he's a local. They're not going to want to get him involved, and he would be a real dick about it too. He'd be just like, "So, what are you Jedi been up to?"
Yeah, maybe I should investigate everything.
Yep. Mm. Master Yoda, we're going to have to give you a full body cavity search. This guy.
Mr. Windu, you're going to have to. And Mace just looks at him. He's like, "Never mind."
He just looks at him just like, "No."
Touch me and you lose that hand. You know, Anakin, when you walk into a medical bay full of people who have survived an explosion and they're not sure if it's a Jedi, you might not want to stay in the middle of the medical bay surrounded by victims of a rumor of a Jedi, that the rumor is growing that it could be a Jedi. Just a thought, smart boy.
He does a lot of, he walks out in front of the protest. It actually works out to their advantage because that's how they meet his wife. But, like, it's just bad form. He's walking out there with the hologram in his hand. So people, you know, if you're doing a police investigation, they're obviously keeping every, you know, anybody's asking, "So what are you doing?" You know, you can't talk about it. It's a police investigation. You don't walk out in front of the public with, like, your one suspect sitting on a, you know, on a 3D hologram on your laptop in front of you as you talk to, you know, the Jedi who are out front. You know, it was
Yeah.
Although it was a you know, it was a plot machine to get the wife involved. But I when he came walking out with it, it's like, hey, put that away, man.
Yeah.
Kind of cop, like, are you?
But this note is, he walks into the medical bay and everybody is already wary that a Jedi is behind it. And he says in front of all of those people who are injured, yeah, we think that the rumor is growing among these people.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, I see you're missing a leg. So, but again, he could be distracted for all we know. Out where they're having the anti-war protest, there are clones actually guarding the temple to keep, and they're in front of all the people and stuff like that. So all these people are just being like, stop the clone violence in the war. And I'm just wondering how many of the clones are going like, well, we wouldn't mind that.
It sounds good to us. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very quick moment. I really love this character, which is, when I saw her, I was just like, ah, it's you! I haven't seen you since season two! When Anakin is about to go in to interrogate Leta, just for the briefest second, Barriss Sophia walks by, and I was just like, oh, Barriss, we haven't seen you since the second Battle of Geonosis. That was the girl who was with Ahsoka during the second Battle of Geonosis, and during the Geonosian brain invaders and that arc.
Right, but they were the ones that got trapped inside, like, that...
The tank.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So we haven't seen her in so long, and I really like that character. So I was just like, when she walked by, I was like, hi, Barriss, I'm really happy to see you. Okay, bye. Bye, Barriss, come back. So it was just a little moment of me fangirling for, like, half a second, because I just really like that character. I do like the interrogation with Leta. I think we learned a lot of insight about how the civilians see the Jedi, and how hard it is to work in the temple. Because Leto is like, you know, this is one of the most honored jobs, and you have to jump through so many hoops, and you have to work for so long. And this was a, you know, and you know, this is, it's really hard to get here. Which also then on the other side shows how pissed off the people are at the Jedi. You would think that the people who work in the temple are the most protected, and then their families died. Like their parents and like husbands and dads and mothers died in this blast. And so these were all families and friends. So I think that was just like a really telling scene to show how much like the people really are starting to turn on the Jedi, as well as how hard it is to work for the Jedi, because she was, you know, like, why would my husband do this? He literally did everything you guys asked for. You asked of him for years.
Yeah, but she's a suspect, too.
Well, we don't know at this point to this act.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, just as far as everybody is. So,
yeah.
You know, yeah, you know, she's... At this point, like, in a procedural, you know, just from a writer point of view, you gotta just, like... When I watch it, I'm just like, everything and everybody as characters is trying to manipulate you, and everything that the writer does is trying to manipulate you. So, and they're doing a great job in this of manipulating back and forth who you feel sympathy for, you know.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, you're going to feel sympathy for her at first, but at the same time, she's kind of being a jerk to the Jedi, so, but you're at the same time, you know, so they're playing your emotions really well with her character.
You know, I kind of got to give props to Anakin too, because when he first walks in there, he was like, we think your husband did this, and then after she explained it, like, you can tell he kind of backed off a little bit.
He was just like, okay, that introduces doubt into this, and I'm going to at least to be polite at this, and also even if there's a chance that she has some involvement in it or knows something about it, if he starts to be nice to her, he might be like, let me take a different tack on this, because I've been being a jerk. Maybe if I act like, you know, everybody's going to be keeping their motivations a little bit, you know, close to their chest.
Yeah. So, I mean, see, Anakin can be a good cop.
He's not bad in this at all. He's not and when
except
he does,
except when he walks out with the hologram.
Yeah. But I mean, he's not losing his shit like he usually does. He gets angry, but his anger, you can tell, like, when he gets angry in this, you look. Whenever Anakin gets angry, I immediately look to see what Ahsoka's doing, and in this one, she's just like, "Oh yeah, I'm angry too.
Yeah,
you got him mad, you know. So, and if Anakin went a little too Anakin on her, she could pull the good cop and be like, hey, partner, calm down. I can't control this guy all the time. You really need to talk to us, you know.
Yeah. My last little note is I just also agree. I love the hologram of the explosion. It's just in such a dark room. It's such a cool visual with all the blue and seeing all the different like tags and the things. And like Ahsoka touches one and she got to see like what part of the ship this is and stuff. That was just a really cool visual.
It's like a modern forensic person's dream, you know?
Yeah. All right. Ready for my big note?
Here, now for the meat and potatoes.
Parts. Yep. So here we are. They built up for seasons, and now we're getting our first real episode of how the Jedi Order is turning on itself and how the people turn so easily on the Jedi when Order 66 happened. I talked to a lot of, you know, whenever I talk to people about Order Episode 3 and Order 66, one of their main problems is how easy the people sided with the Empire. It was like overnight. They're like, yeah, people just sided with the Empire. How dumb is that? And I always tell them to go and watch Clone Wars, because Filoni has been laying this groundwork up to this point throughout the entire season. I mean, yep. As early as season one, we had the Lerman and Sham Syndulla both questioning the Jedi. Season two, we got Satine questioning the Jedi. And so, like, they've been laying it down throughout the entire series about how people are trusting the Jedi less and less. And bam, here it is. Like, here it is. It's all come to a head now.
Well, you see, the thing about it is, The dirty truth of it is
there's no such thing as a nice war.
Well, there's no such thing as a nice war, and the Jedi are not doing themselves any favor by the way they've been acting. And that's since we've been starting to watch the Jedi in Episode 1. They were probably been jackasses for probably a full generation before this, you know? You get the feeling in Episode 1 that Jedi Council's been just sort of operating like that for a good long time. Mm-hmm. And once a war starts, any, you know, instantly
Palpatine can out this corruption.
Yeah, that it's a corruption of like what the Jedi are really supposed to be, or like especially like within the context of the Force. You know, they're not being really spiritual at all, and they're how they fit in with society. I'm sure they're I'm sure they're in the Jedi Council chambers meditating and taking classes on the living force and stuff, you know.
I'm
taking my 3-week seminar on the living force in you.
I just imagined force basket weaving.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, they're doing that, but the way they are dealing with society at large is sort of like low-level cops, condescending jerks, and then now they're leading a war. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's a smart move by Palpatine. You start a war, and then and that just takes all the problems that the Jedi did themselves and makes them worse. So Palpatine is manipulated things for the Jedi to be their own downfall. He doesn't really have to, like, he's plotting their downfall, but he's plotting it by just like making it easier for them to screw themselves up, and they were already messed up. So he's
can
just
I
like
mention,
oh pardon you still there
oh okay I was just like can I mention two accounts where we've seen Jedi bullshittery this season alone?
Yes,
the Saw Gerrera arc and Maul taking over Mandalore.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And those are just two, like, off the top of your head.
Those are two examples of, yeah, just from this season alone, because they weren't supposed to get involved in the Saw Gerrera arc, because it was an internal affair, and they had to do it secretly and have Jedi bullshittery. And then number two, Mandalore was a neutral system. You know, if they weren't at war, you know their asses would have been to Mandalore in a heartbeat. But yeah, I mean, that's just two examples this season alone where they are picking and choosing who to help.
Yeah, and there's been just like innumerable examples over the whole course of this show and the prequel trilogies of them just being kind of douches.
As early as season one, like they weren't supposed to help the Lerman and they did anyway.
Yeah, and I mean, and just the way they sort of act in general, they're very imperious and secretive at the same time. You know, when you look at the Jedi from the outside, from what we know from the prequels and Clone Wars, they don't look good. From the inside, they don't look good. You know, they're sympathetic at least, but they still there's still all sorts of stuff you're just going like, oh, come on, guys.
I mean, if you're a random citizen, you know, you probably, A, never see a Jedi in your life. B, if you live in Coruscant, they live on this high fucking palace, like, on top of, in the sun. And what we know at Coruscant, like, 99% of the people live in the lower levels. Many of them don't ever see the light of day. And so, like, they probably, most people, and that's just on Coruscant. We're not talking about the rest of the galaxy. So, I mean, like, they're probably, like, these kind of, like, they probably seem like mysterious wizards that, like, show up when shit get bad. But now it's to a point where shit gets bad, and they might not even show up.
Yeah, and when they show up, they could be they're condescending and bureaucratic.
Yeah, I mean, I think Lux Bonteri had a good point where he was like, on Onderon, he was like, "Why aren't the Jedi coming?" And Ahsoka's like, "Well, because they're not." And he's like, "Well, that's dumb. We need them."
Right, right.
My next point is, I just love because Anakin says a lot of the Jedi disagree with the war as well, which I think that's the first time it's been stated that he's like, yeah, there are Jedi who don't agree with the war. I think that's a really big statement. That's a very big pre-episode 3 Order 66 statement.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
And then I started thinking, like, I wonder if Qui-Gon was still alive. Like, where would he stand in this war?
I don't think he would have liked it at all. I think Qui-Gon was sort of like Yoda and was a little more prescient on what was happening. But I don't think he had the same big picture as Yoda. He had a more, but I think he would have definitely smelled a rat in the, I think if Qui-Gon was around, I think he would have sniffed out Palpatine a lot earlier, tell the truth. Yeah. But he would have definitely smelled a rat in their, you know, inclusion into the war.
Yeah. I would have loved to see him still alive just to have him have a talk with Obi-Wan, being like, Obi-Wan, what are you doing?
I think of him and Obi-Wan as like the hippie Jedis, you know?
But even then, Obi-Wan's on the council and he willingly fights in this war.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So, and following up on that note, this is also just like a really nice precursor to the current Darth Vader comic. The first two arcs is like the beginning of the Inquisitors and stuff like that. And during the current Darth Vader comic, we have a bit of an origin story to the Grand Inquisitor, because we found out in Rebels that he was a Jedi Temple Guard that went to the dark side. And he talks about how angry he was at the Jedi Order, and he saw during this time their corruption, which is why when Order 66 happens, he sided with Vader and Palpatine, because he already knew that the Jedi Order was corrupt. It's actually really funny. The person he hates the most is the librarian Jocasta Nu, because Jocasta Nu wouldn't let him read certain books, and it pissed him off. It's great. But it's just a really nice moment streamlining all the canon together, because we got to see, hearing about like other Jedi like Dooku and Krell and stuff like that, but the Grand Inquisitor is alive during this time, and he's one of these Jedi that are already starting to go, you know, maybe the Order's not that great. And we got that in the Vader comics, which is just a nice moment where they're just, this canon just runs together so pretty.
For once.
I know. And finally, my last note, Anakin says there are many political idealists among the Jedi, which I found a very interesting term of phrase, because I thought that the Jedi were separate from politics. So is this Jedi politics that they're talking about, or are these actual Senate politics? And I'm thinking it's Jedi politics that these people don't agree with.
I don't know. Politics are politics, but it could be both.
Yeah. Because originally the Jedi weren't supposed to be part of the Senate, but like now they're kind of like the Senate's dogs, where the Senate's like, here, this planet's under attack, go there, and they're like, okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's inter-Jedi politics, but the Jedi still need to be involved in Senate politics because they're intimately involved. The Senate's actions and the actions of the world at large are going to involve the Jedi now, so they have to be involved in both sets of politics.
Yeah, but I thought that was interesting because I don't think we've heard political idealists ever described about a Jedi.
See, I think Jedi can have all sorts. I'll bet you Jedi have all sorts of wacky ideas because they're all sort of like religious mystics on some level. So some of, you know, but I'll bet you they're also highly trained to be like objective when it comes to Jedi procedure. You know what I mean? So they can be, you know, they can have all their, but you know, that's why Qui-Gon could have all his beliefs that didn't really jibe with the council and stuff. But when it came down to a situation, he still would follow, you know, the Jedi rules for the most part. But that's also, there seems to always be a little leeway built in to how the Jedi can react, too. So,
But that's all I had for Act 2.
All right, you want to wrap this sucker up?
Let's wrap this sucker up. Act 3?
Act 3.
Anakin and Ahsoka go to Jakar's home, which is a dump. And Ahsoka is like, I did not realize that the Jedi paid minimum wage. Jeez, no wonder this guy blew that place up. And no one answers the door. So they force their way in with the Force.
Oh, I get jokes.
Sunglasses walk away in the explosion. They're careful moving through the apartment because the dead dude bro was a munitions expert and they would rather not blow themselves up. They look around. Anakin finds an anti-war message in the living room. Ahsoka discovers that the nanobots are in the disposer, and the nanobots were in the food, which is how they got into Jakar's blood system. Leta pops up, wondering why they're in her house. And Ahsoka scans her, and Leta is free of the droids. They explain that they believe that Jakar was set up and that he didn't know he was the bomb. Leta comes with them willingly for questioning, and then runs away the moment she...
He was the bomb.
He was the bomb. He didn't even know it. And then she runs away the moment that she hits the streets. The Jedi chase after her and corner Leta in an alley. And she says that her husband is dead. And Anakin's like, hey, Snips, did we ever say he was dead? And Ahsoka's like, nope, never said it. And Leta's like, well, fuck. And Anakin and Ahsoka fist bump it out. And explosions like Jakar's body. Because he's the bomb! Thank you for throwing in the bomb joke. That's great. And Ahsoka is pissed that people and Jedi die because of Leta. But angry Anakin comes out, letting his Vader flag wave to say hello, and demands answers from her. And Leta admits setting up her own husband to die, and they take her into custody. Russo also reports that it appears Jakar acted alone, so it wasn't a Jedi. Before Anakin and Ahsoka celebrate, Windu comes around the corner with a pile of wet blankets and flops them on everybody. He says that the Clone Wars are quickly becoming unpopular, and the citizens are starting to turn against the Jedi. Anakin and Ahsoka walk away, and she says that she would feel weird if it had been a Jedi. And Anakin says, "There will be Jedi who disappoint you." Like me! I'm gonna disappoint you so much! I'm gonna disappoint Obi-Wan, I'm gonna kill my wife, gonna probably disappoint my future son, my future daughter is going to be booted from the Senate because her dad was Darth Vader, which is why the Resistance isn't supported in the new trilogy. So yeah, get used to it, kid. Lots of disappointment. The end. What'd you think of Act 3?
Well, he's more wet blanket than Windu there. Jeez.
I had fun writing that last part.
Just my one weird note, the music in this part is vaguely Star Trek-like. It's got a sort of percussiveness. It's mystery show music, and which is something you don't usually hear in Star Wars, that atmosphere, but you did hear it in Star Trek quite a bit, and it just reminded me a lot of Star Trek music from the original series. And I don't think it's on purpose, maybe, but it does. Or, you know, maybe they were trying to make it more like TV music, but it was mystery music, so it was kind of cool.
I had a note about that too. I thought the pacing throughout Leta's apartment was really great because it was the way that the music was playing out, it kept kind of psyching you up, like Ahsoka would approach a corner and the music would rise and then there's nothing there. Mm-hmm. And Anakin would walk towards the picture on the wall and the music would rise and it's nothing there.
That's how it's supposed to go though. But that's good though. That's what you do. Everything is suspicious and everything, you know, there's red herrings at every turn.
Like when the thing was beeping and I was like, it's a bomb, it's a bomb, it's a bomb, it's a bomb. And then it's just like an anti-war picture.
Do you think they did set that up? Because I thought the same thing, but I'm not sure if they set that up to purposely be a red herring or if it was just awkwardly done. And that's something they don't bring up later either. You'd think they'd be like, hey, you know, she had a anti-clone hologram sitting in her house, you know, something like that, or bring it up to her, you know, what's up with this, you know? But they just sort of, he just sort of seems to gloss it up. I thought they were about to get blown up. That's what I thought was going on there.
My only thing is that this is the first of four, so they could always bring it up later. I think it was just more of a time constraint because by the time they actually, like, find her and like get her to confess and stuff like that, there's only really like 2 minutes left in the episode. Yeah. So I just take it more as a time constraint. They just didn't really have a chance to bring it up. Though they could have, like, when Anakin's yelling at her, had been like, you kill people. We found that thing in your apartment. I can't believe you did this. Like, it could have been dropped there. But I take it more as a time constraint. They just, you know, there's only so much you can put in the episode.
Right. I like that they mentioned that the Jedi don't pay shit.
Yeah. I have a note about that, too.
Anakin's statement at the end where he's basically like, as long as there's good Jedi, it's all worth it. Oh, boy, that rings hollow. And it's delivered well. You can tell he does not mean it when he says that. You know, he's just hoping for the best. But you hear that and you go just like, yeah, Anakin, not so much.
Yeah.
Don't know how that's going to work out for you.
Know how that works out for him.
Yeah, we have a pretty... We find out in the next movie, and it's not too good. And there's some good Jedi then, but yeah. But I like how they handle... I like that it wasn't... If he would have said that 3 seasons ago, it would have been upbeat, and he would have been like, come on, Snips. And this one, it's just like, yeah. Yeah, you're not selling that. And I thought it was very well put out, especially since we're talking about 3D rendered, you know, characters. Once again, Anakin is way, way more of a emotional character in these Clone Wars than he was in any of the movies.
Yeah. You mean an actual character?
Yes.
Like, yeah, it's scary when he starts yelling.
Yeah, and they can do stuff like make everything dark around him, you know, a little dark under his eyes. It's really nice.
Yeah.
That's all the notes I got.
My first note was, I guess Star Wars world doesn't have warrants because they just walk into Jakar's house.
Jedi don't need no stinking warrants.
I know, I was just like, oh, if this was the real world, man, they would need a warrant. I like I said, I also have a note. I like how Ahsoka says that she thought that the Jedi Temple would pay better. I feel that's a questioning nod towards the Jedi, because we heard in the second act from Leta how many hoops that her husband had to jump through just to work in the temple. And it's thought to be like one of the highest places to work in the galaxy. And these guys live in a sleazy-ass dump with like trash in their hallway and like a drunkard guy sitting on their front porch. I mean... That's a lot. That's very telling about the Jedi Order and how they pay people.
Yeah, I mean, assuming that they just don't let... Maybe they've been spending all their money on nanobombs.
That's true. I mean, for all we know, they could be gamblers.
Yeah,
But if that's a very valid point, because I did think about that.
Spending it all on death sticks.
But that being said, if it's not true, then that's telling.
Yeah, no, I got the distinct feeling that it's true.
Yeah. Especially how the line was delivered by Ahsoka. So, I mean,
yep.
I feel, but then I also, like, the Jedi really don't have much need for money, so I could also see that, like, they just literally have no idea what to pay people.
They don't even, so they're cheap, but, exactly, and they don't, they're basically religious, they don't value, you know, they're not after riches and stuff, so, yeah, they might be being cheap and not even know it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's hard to say, but I could totally see the Jedi being cheap and having a lot of their, you know, being like, hey, you get to work for the Jedi, come on.
Yeah, it's thought to be more of like an honor-based thing, yeah. Be like, I work for the Jedi. So,
I pacing work for the Jedi.
Jedi. The pacing of the apartment is awesome. You know, Russo got a little... moment. What? Oh, the robot Russo. So we've, this is very much a crime episode. And there's always that one point, like the meme where the guy is like, blah, blah, blah. And he says like something very serious and he puts on his sunglasses and the music's just like, yeah. Like he got one of those moments. Cause he, at the end he was like, and Jakar acted alone. And he flipped down his goggles.
I'm sure that was on purpose. I mean, they brought up CSI talking about it. I'm sure that had to be on purpose.
Yeah. So I started thinking about Leta in Act 2. Because, like, Anakin had the hologram and was showing it off in front of the crowd. And she was like, that's my husband. Why did she do that in the first place? Like, I know she was there to protest the war, and we saw that she had anti-war propaganda in her apartment, but why go back to your own damn crime scene?
They always return to the scene of the crime.
Yeah, I was just like, girl. I mean, eventually they would come, but it would give you more time to, like, hide evidence and shove some, like, bananas down that disposal or something.
Exactly, yeah. At least have the house, you know, turn off your anti-clone hologram.
Yeah, I mean, that just...
But we don't know. We don't know what's going on here. There could be all kinds of double crosses and hidden motivations going
on,
too.
And she did say to Anakin, you're dealing with powers bigger than you.
Right. So, you know, Dooku could be involved, or not Dooku, you know, Palpy could be involved, or it could be, there could be a Jedi, you know, there could be, since we had Krell, they could definitely have another Jedi going bad.
Yeah.
In Clone Wars, so, yeah.
I mean,
we obviously don't... They ended it sort of like, well, that's solved, but it's so obviously not solved that there could be so many turnarounds in what we think is going on.
And we know this is the beginning of a 4-episode arc.
Right. And it's a crime procedural, so, yeah.
Yeah. And my last note is, even though it's the first in a 4-episode arc, this really could be a one and done.
Yep.
And it would have been a great one and done. But what I like about this one, it's not like all the arcs this season where the first episode was a setup for the following episodes. This one does stand alone, which is nice from all the other arcs, which like were all just like set up, but it was like open to the next episode and stuff like that. This one truly is a standalone. It could have been ended here and it would have been just as good.
Yep, and it could have just left it at that. It's better in the context of where the story is to leave it on that uncertain note anyway. You don't really need this to be a satisfying end. It's better as an unsatisfying end.
Yeah. I mean, this could have been one of those episodes, like, if they did, like, last season, it could have popped up again this season and been like, oh, remember what happened in that time?
Yeah.
So it works either way, but, I mean... For the first, unlike, you know, where, like, the first of the kids arc, or the first of the Saul Guerrera arc, or the first of the Darth Maul and Death Watch arc, this does stand alone, which is really nice. But that's all I have for this episode. Did you have anything else?
No, I'm ready to score it up.
All right, so score it up, Chris.
Well, not to knock this episode, but it's gone down from the last episode, and I gave this one an 8. It's a good, solid episode. Story-wise, it's all sort of meh, except for where, like, you had your big notes in part 2. You know, the starting to nibble away at the faith in the Jedi. That's the really important part of this. But for the most part, this is just a solid political episode with great visuals and audio in it. So it's very, just like the last one, but it wasn't quite as exciting as the last one. So I'm giving it an 8.
Granted, the last one had like battles and heads falling off and like people dying.
It was crazy, and it was visually great, and it had story resonance. So yeah, not to knock this episode, this is a really good and interesting episode, and you know, I might even like it more once I see how the rest of this arc plays out too, you know.
For me, like, I love this episode. There's so much to it. There's political intrigue with the Jedi. We get to see the Jedi in the state of the war. We get to see how people are reacting to the Jedi in the war. Ahsoka and Anakin are great together. It actually, I don't want to, like, downplay the first act, because it is really nice to have that back-to-basics Clone Wars moment. Because it's especially since it's been so long since we've had just the two of them. So that was actually a really nice opening act, just to have the two of them in just a run-of-the-mill battle. So overall, this is just a great episode. I am purposely scoring this a little bit lower because I know where this arc goes. And so I'm also giving it an 8 out of 10.
Okay, so I'm right. So I might like this better when I...
I wouldn't go too much higher. I was debating 8.5, but I brought it down to an 8 because if I remember correctly, because I've only seen this arc once. So if I remember it correctly, it builds very well to the end. Something to keep in mind, Chris...
I did start at an 8.5 too. That's funny. We went through basically the same thought process there.
And something to note, Chris, which really, I think, to me, adds a lot of impact on the episode, on this arc, is this was the last arc to air on Cartoon Network because the series was technically canceled after this. So the only reason we got anything of season 6 is because Dave Filoni went, hey, we already have 12 episodes made. Can we at least put it on Netflix? And they were like, sure. So this is technically the last arc of Clone Wars before they got the okay to put up the next 12 episodes, the 12 episodes after this arc.
Interesting. So the next episodes I watch, because I
was technically the last.
Well, they should also have no Cartoon Network, you know, like this one I'm watching. It's like coming up next, Green Lantern, and I'm like, oh, this is funny, a Star Wars property and a DC property side by side, you know. It's just the opposite now.
Yeah, this arc will be the last of the Cartoon Network
ones. So I won't be seeing that stuff on it. There won't be any marks on it because it'll be on Netflix where they don't have commercials.
Yeah, after this arc, yes. That being said, of course, granted, we know that they wanted to go to 8th season, and it just didn't happen. So when the show got canceled after this arc, fans were, like, panicking after the end of this arc. And that's actually something I want to talk about when we get to the final episode of this arc, is, like, would this have been a good ending of Clone Wars, the way it ends? That is something I want us to talk about. But, I mean, of course, then Dave Filoni was just like, can we at least put out these episodes?
Totally, so, it, like, would have been a good note, knowing what we know about episode 3.
You don't know how it ends.
No, I mean just this episode. If it ended with this episode.
No, this is not the final. This arc is the final thing, not this episode.
Right, but this episode is the final episode on Cartoon Network.
No, that's not what I said. This arc was the final arc on Cartoon Network.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this arc was the final arc. So after this arc, everything else was on Netflix. Mm-hmm. So after the 4th episode, so we still have 3 more of Cartoon Network episodes. And then after that, everything was just like, Dave Filoni was like, well, fuck it.
Oh, my God. Then we're off to another season again. We got another season wrap up coming up so fast.
Yeah. So 3 more episodes and then a season wrap up and then 12 episodes of season 6, season wrap up, do our wrap up episodes of like Clone Wars material, and then probably something else here, and then Rebels. We're going to have Rebels before the end of the year.
Yeah.
So, it's coming. I'm so excited to start Rebels. Oh my god. I can't wait. Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. I was actually surprised. I thought we were going to get more comments on this one, because this episode's so fucking bad.
Oh my god, I just realized, Hope. We have to, I'll have to recruit Gene once again and make a new opener.
Yeah.
for this show. We'll
soon.
Have to have a more Rebels appropriate opener.
You know, I've just been thinking all this time in the opening when I'm like, hi, welcome to JGS and Jedi, weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. I just know the first several episodes of Rebels, I'm going to be like, Star Wars The Clone Wars, Rebels!
Well, yeah, I just want to hear Gene just go, you know, and we got to find somewhere in Clone Wars someone yelled no. Somewhere Anakin yells no in Clone Wars. And I got to find that because we got to have Gene just going. And then the Clone Wars got canceled. No.
Yeah, because then it would start off with 2014. The Clone Wars is canceled.
Yeah, yeah.
2014. Needless to say, they came back. Anyway, so our feedback comes from the episode A Sunny Day in the Void, my least favorite episode of Clone Wars, and I'm actually really surprised that more people didn't comment about how much this episode is fucking atrocious.
We might have a lot of, if you don't want to say nothing nice, don't say anything at all type of people who listen to us, I don't know.
That's true.
Boring. All right, Paul C. Kelly says, wow, you two already called it out on two things I was thinking. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Chris called out Seinfeld entire episode in one area style, like the Garage Train episodes. Hope called out the similar names of Gascon to Gaston from Beauty and the Beast. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
This whole arc is an insult to R2-D2. I agree.
Yes, it is. Totally 100%. 110%,
baby.
It's a mockery
of all things R2. I am surprised he did not go Sith after this one. Ooh, that would have been good. He had it much tougher career-wise. And
I have to say, if R2 goes Sith, he'd pretty much turn into Chopper from Rebels.
Well, yeah. If Chopper's R2 went Sith, then the Jedi, then the Sith would rule the galaxy for ages.
But Chopper's already a little murder bot, so he would have turned into Chopper.
Yes. He had it much tougher career-wise than Anakin, who was only told he was not allowed to be master prior to turning to Vader. So, I had a question. If you had a choice between the Sarlacc pit and spending a day in one room with Gascon, Pappy Lerman, Krell, and Nadar, oh god. Kit Fisto's Calamarian Padawan. Yeah, I remember Nadar now that you bring him up, thank you.
Yeah.
What would you choose? Also, if you had the choice to add one character to that room, who would you choose to remedy that situation?
Oh, this is easy. I know it in a heartbeat.
Oh, I'd go in the room rather than the Sarlacc pit, but I'd bring Greevy with me.
I would choose to be in the Sarlacc pit with Pappy Lerman, because he's so tiny I could just kick him.
No. You get either the Sarlacc pit, or you get to hang out with all those guys in a room. You can't just pick one person to take into the pit with you. It's the pit.
It's the pit,
hanging out with these guys, but you can bring in one.
You know, in that case, I would still pick Pappy Lerman, because he's still a cute little fuzzy thing. I could just pet his head and just be like, yeah!
No. You get Pappy Lerman no matter what. You're in the room with Gascon, Pappy Lerman, Krell, and Nadar.
Oh.
You're sitting in there, but you can either do that or go in the Sarlacc pit. But if you do sit in the room with all those guys, you can bring someone into the room to make that stay better for you in whatever way, depending on who it is. I bring in Greevy to go on a murder rampage.
See, then what's keeping Greevy from turning on you?
Oh, I will leave while Greavy's taking care of the rest of them.
I would bring Cad Bane.
And are you kidding me? I would be just like, dude, Greevy, it's me.
please stab me.
Look, Greavy's gonna get Krell's got what, 4 lightsabers?
Uh-huh.
Nadar's got 1, so that's 5, and then 5 lightsabers, and then a tiny Gascon lightsaber if he's got one. So Greavy will be my pal, man. I'll be like, hey, man, I'm just some dude. I brought you here, and now you got 5 more lightsabers.
And then, like, oh my god, that's a total of 9 lightsabers in the room.
I'm like, dude, man, I will be your gore.
Just imagine imagine you dressed up like Slave Leia at Grievous' feet, just being
now
like,
I'd get in some armor like Gore. Now I want to be your Gore.
Who would I choose to? Because I'd probably choose the room too. At least I have a chance of getting out of the room to live. You know, I would choose Cad Bane because he's a Jedi killer. I think he could take on Krell. He has a track record of killing Jedi, so I think he'd be my best choice of getting out of that room.
Yeah, yeah. And you not being a Jedi, he wouldn't care to kill you.
Either that or Obi-Wan, because we know that Obi-Wan beats Grievous, and they would know how to distract each other until I could get out of the room, so Obi-Wan would be like, let's banter! Oh, wait,
well, Grievous isn't there.
Yeah, sorry, Krell.
Yeah, that's true.
Because we know that Krell was cool with other Jedis. It was clones that he had problems with. So I would bring either Cad Bane or Obi-Wan. I think that would be my best chance out of there.
Oh, hey, you know, we got all this candy.
Hope, yeah, we didn't choose.
And we did not choose. And oh my God, what a... Listen to all these guys.
What is this big thing? This giraffe? Drosty.
I got two of those. I looked those up on the internet. They are chocolate. They are like cylinders of chocolate, but there's all different kinds of them. So this is like a mystery pack of some sort of chocolate.
I don't know if I want something that big tonight. What about?
We've got stuff from, oh my God, everything is so delightful looking, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm looking at everything. What's the Huckleberry Gems? I just feel like there's two of them.
Huckleberry Gems, what do they look like?
The kind of a purplish package. If you're wondering what we're doing, Chris hates American Kit Kats because he's a big whiner. And our friend Dario Gonzalez is a flight attendant, so he sends us candy all over the world for us to review on the show. And he's also Chris's co-podcaster for Eden Beat It. The Huckleberry Gems, now on a world tour. I don't know what that means. I have no idea what country this comes from. It's from the world!
I have not found my Huckleberry Gems yet.
I also have a Barina chocolate. Old Faithful. I'm just picking up stuff
Faithful,
now.
Old Faithful, there's a cherry cocktail. What names? Twirl, there's an Idaho Spud.
Hey, I'm holding that in my hand. Let's do that one.
Oh, okay. The Idaho Spud it is.
I wonder where that's from.
I'm like obsessed with finding the ones you mentioned in the beginning, but Idaho Spud it is. I'm guessing the Idaho Spud is from Idaho because it's the candy bar that makes Ohio famous.
I'm going to read what this is. After applying a trip to Idaho and talking with the pilot who was from Boise, I had to seek out a candy from the Idaho Candy Company, who has been making this candy since 1901. And I have heard that the Idaho Spud was made to look like a potato.
Ah!
I dropped my thing. Okay, so the Idaho Spud it is from Missouri.
Dear. The Idaho Spud looks more like...
A turd?
A turd. With lots of... With like, spangled with the most corn a turd's ever had. It's
Mine
big.
Looks like it's covered in coconut.
Yeah, it does look like it's covered in coconut. I don't see coconut in the ingredients, though.
Oh, my God.
It's big, but it's very light looking. Okay, I'm biting
it. It is.
Oh,
that's definitely coconut.
Not what I expected.
Mmm.
It's filled with fluffy marshmallow.
Yeah.
Chocolate marshmallow.
Oh, man.
And it is coconut on the outside for sure.
It is a bit sweet.
It's very sweet.
Well, coconut is the third ingredient on this after sugar and corn syrup,
okay,
so.
Okay, I didn't see it on there.
Mmm.
It's weird. It's somewhere between nougat and marshmallow. It's delicious.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's a little sweet. I can't eat all that.
It's like a it's like a chocolate coconut peep, almost.
Well, where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That is our website, as if you wouldn't know what a website was. And that's where we keep all our podcasts. We have millions and zillions and quadrillions of podcasts. I mean, damn, this one's almost up to 120. Our main Two True Freaks, myself and Scott Gardner, we're up to, like, over in the teens of the 500s of podcasts. So, yeah, it's getting pretty pretty bloated with podcasts over there. And we have probably like 25, 30 people podcasting over here on all different nerd topics. So come on out and check us out. We are also on Facebook. We got a Two True Freaks page, which will tell you all the stuff we're putting out. We got a Two True Freaks Cantina, which is just full of nerds talking about stuff. Like right now, everybody's talking about how much they love the new Avengers movie, but not spoiling it.
Good. And do you know how hard it was to...
It's like a hard one to discuss without spoiling stuff with it.
Do you know how hard it is to work in a comic book store inside a mall with a movie theater waiting for 2 days to see the goddamn movie? Oh my god, because on Friday people would walk in and be like, oh man, Avengers! And I'd be like, not today, Satan! Get out of my store!
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's different. You know, you can sort of ignore things on the internet. In a store, you're sort of locked in there.
Yeah, people would walk right out of the movie theater and come straight to our store and be like, let's talk about this. I'm like, nope, not today. Don't even look at me. I don't want to hear it.
You just pull the shotgun out from behind the counter. What were you talking about there, smart guy? Nothing. Archie Comics.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
most of the people were just like, oh, I'm sorry. They're like, I'm not seeing it till Sunday. Right. I'm sorry.
Well, you can also find all our Two True Freaks episodes if you sign up for our Twitter page, which is Two True Freaks at Twitter. And that is run by the ever popular Gene, the podcasting machine. And who will be getting a new assignment soon enough to do the new opening for Jay Guys and Jedi. So that should be exciting. Something for everybody to look forward to. Everybody. Where can they find you, Hope?
You can find me at Jay Guys and Jedi. I run our Twitter account. You can also find me at Hope Molinex. And I'm also currently I'm also writing currently a Thrawn fan fiction called Forces of Gravity. Over on Archive of Our Own. And I also just started beta reading my best friend's Thrawn fanfiction called Valkyrie Strike. So we're both working on that one together. And the
dueling Thrawn fanfictions. I like it.
No. Though hers is going to get way more hits than mine because I'm writing for a niche and she's writing for, in general, the masses. So I already know that her fanfiction is going to be getting more than mine, but I'm excited because I'm her beta reader and I'm helping her with it. But it's called Valkyrie Stripe by Calypson, and you can also see my username, which is Chaos Lydia, because both of our names are on it. And the summary of her fanfiction goes, Thrawn has been working his way through the ranks in the Imperial Navy for nearly 5 years, but finally, the actions of the Empire have gone too far. He must now resort to alternative means to achieve his goals in the service of the Chiss. A.K.A. Rebels Thrawn! Thrawn is a rebel! So... I'm helping her with that, and yeah, it's fun, so. But yeah, that's where you can find me.
Excellent. Well, we will be back next week with the final arc of Clone Wars.
Oh, we still got 3 episodes. Well, and the final arc plus 12 episodes and right. The lost missions that we... And the 8 unfinished episodes that... I'm actually very excited about that. Oh, well, I didn't even think about that. We have 8 unfinished episodes.
We got all these endings that we can milk for this, so we'll milk this one first.
No, I didn't think about that because we talked about it. We were going to do the unfinished story arcs. They're only on StarWars.com. But there was 8 episodes of unfinished Clone Wars that they put up, and it's all technically canon. I've never seen those, so that's another 8 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So technically, we have 20 more episodes of Season 6, so we're not... Maybe we won't get to Rebels this year, because I totally forgot about that. So
plus,
we might
do our fun stuff at the end of the year, so we'll be doing some, but it won't be far into next year, into 2019, that we will be doing Rebels, that's for sure.
Yeah, so, yeah, I didn't even think about that.
But
so,
by December, we'll be doing a Last Jedi commentary, you know?
Yeah, so it's coming.
Honestly, well, I think a Last Jedi commentary with you, I think that's going to be a riot.
I'm excited. I still haven't seen it again since it's been in theaters, so.
I have. It gets better on repeated viewing, so.
Yeah. I'm actually really excited because one of my customers and I were talking Star Wars, and then I was just like, do you listen to podcasts? And he was like, yes. And I was like, you're disagreeing with me a lot. And he was like, well, you know, I have a very specific view of how I view Star Wars. And I was like, I'll tell you what, do you like debating Star Wars with people? And he's like, yes. And I was like, my co-podcaster loves debating people. So if you listen to our podcast and go to our Facebook page and leave a comment, he's gonna fight you. And he was so excited. So Jake, if you're listening to this, hey
Jake, how's it going?
But
why don't you come over to Facebook? Yeah, we'll talk some Star Wars.
Mm. Yeah, by the time this episode's come out, I gave him the business card 3 weeks ago, so I don't know if he's actually listened to it yet.
It'll be totally disappointing if he does listen, and then we go there to debate, and we turn out, we like, I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, so.
I'll try to disagree with you, Jake.
So he was like, yes, I would love to fight that. And I was like, okay, well, here's my card, enjoy. So. Well, that's all I have, so I guess until next week when the intrigue and the plots to bring disaster get worse. I'm going to tell you right now, Chris, I threw something in my notes that was a massive clue to the rest of the arc, but I won't tell you what.
All right, well, we'll see it. Yeah, next week for CSI Coruscant.
Yeah!
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at TwoTrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at TwoTrueFreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O. TrueFreaks.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Sock it to me?